Let me introduce Supervisor Melgar, and she will give a talk, let us know kind of what's going on with her. We have quite a host of questions that people sent in when they registered for the meeting. So when we get to Q&A, I will go through those because I think a lot of the questions you may have are already part of these, and that would be things, for example, which is a big question for everybody, is the number 6 bus. So we'll go through some of those. She can answer those questions, and then we'll take some other questions after that. So without me talking anymore, let's go to Supervisor Melgar, and thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Dennis, for having me. So if I cut out, I will turn off my camera because my video, my connection is not so strong. I'm at my in-laws' house in New Hampshire. So let me give you a little bit of a recap of what's going on, and then I will take the questions and give as much answers as I can, seeing as I don't work for the MTA. I'm trying to work with them and, you know, be responsive to the community's needs. So let me start by telling you what we've been up to at City Hall. As you all probably have heard, we just approved the budget. This past week, the mayor signed it. It was a fairly unanimous budget. It was only one supervisor who was against it. It was a very lucky budget. We had more income than we thought that we had predicted. The economy is coming back after the pandemic more quickly and in stronger ways than we had anticipated. And we also got a bunch of money from the federal government, which has allowed us to maintain levels of service. So we also, you know, got lucky. The things that I can tell you are in there are lots of funding for addressing homelessness. We put money to restore cuts to early care and education, after school programming, senior and disabled services, a restoration to the Dignity Fund. We put in money for the police department. We were able to restore some of the funding that was allocated for overtime and maintaining police levels to 120 police and have 3 new academies over the next 48 months. And so, if you guys have any specific questions about the budget, I'd be happy to, you know, take you through it because it was my first time, but it's a very big document with lots of moving parts. So in the past month at the board, we did lots of things that are pandemic related. As you may have seen, we made the shared spaces program permanent. On the Land Use Committee, I negotiated with Senior Disability Action to make sure that the program responded to the needs of folks with disabilities and worked with folks to go above and beyond just the ADA requirements. We passed the climate change goals for the city, and the most important part is that we are looking to have restoration of many of the lines for Muni, as you all know, in August, and hopefully, you know, normalize and get back to full service at some point. Although, you know, some of my colleagues are pushing for December. We did pass a resolution that was a majority resolution asking Muni to do just that, and that includes the 6 bus. We have been in lots of discussions about the Great Highway and the potential closure of the Great Highway, starting at Sloat and going north. The Great Highway south of the zoo is going to be closed whether we vote on it or not, because we are out of compliance with a coastal commission. And so that is slated to be close to traffic starting next year. It'll be a pedestrian path, and there's going to be lots of work that's going to be done there to shore up the cliff and protect the sewer treatment facility that's there next to the zoo. Other than that, there's also a bunch of, visions and dreams for the upgrade of Lake Merced, the boathouse, and the redevelopment of the former gun range facility on the south side of the lake. And the the Recreation Parks Department is going through an environmental review process to do that, to have community design vetting for the hopefully the redevelopment of that site. On the other side of District 7, we have been working with City College to plan out the transportation infrastructure there on Ocean Avenue. And we have created a task force of citizens who want to support that. I think that's all I have for you in terms of updates, and I will be happy to to answer any questions that you guys have about what I've talked about or anything else that I haven't covered that you're wondering about.
All right, well, take over. I mentioned if you came in late, we have a number of questions that came in as people registered, and we'll go through those, and then we'll take other questions. So if you had any questions, put them in the chat room, and we'll get to those. So number one, which you did sort of briefly answer, what are your efforts to keep the number 6 as an electric bus?
So the 6 is supposed to be an electric bus. Right now they are running, and I don't know if there's anybody here from the MTA. I thought somebody was invited. Oh, so maybe this is this may be a better question for them. So let me just say that as a District 6 supervisor, I will push for the full restoration of the 6 and keep it as an electric bus. I don't want to go back on our climate change goals. You know, I think that, you know, we have been going towards the electrification of the fleet. That being said, I understand that because we're running a modified route that may be a little bit difficult. But I think I'm going to turn it over to Mariana, who may answer this question, if that's okay, Dennis.
Certainly.
Sure. Hi. Everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you. I am Mariana McGuire, Public Relations Officer with the Communications MTA. And I'm going to do my best to answer your questions, but I do want to say that I am not the operations expert, so there are some details that I will not necessarily have, but I am happy to take any questions and feedback and get you answers that I don't have and share feedback with my colleagues in operations and in service planning. So right now, we will have a service change coming up on August 14th. It's going to be a pretty significant one because we're bringing back a number of bus routes, either their full pre-pandemic route, and or with modifications. And in many cases, those modifications are extensions. For that service change, the 52, so right now the 36 and the 52 are connected. We're going to disconnect them and take them back to their previous routes. And the 52, I believe, is being extended, and it's going to cover the old route of the 6 south of Parnassus to 14th and Quintara. So that 52 will provide connections to the Anjuda and the Inner Sunset before continuing to Laguna Honda. And it'll be from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays, 8 a.m., 10 p.m. On weekends. As far as the future, We are also in the process of figuring out, looking at what some alternatives could be for what we are calling the 2022 service network. And we want to start to come out of COVID, where we've had to deal with resource constraints and make decisions based on those resource constraints. Well, we're still going to have resource constraints, but we want to try to make a little bit longer term decisions about what the system as a whole can look like moving forward, considering our longer term largely financial resource challenges. And that's going to be a public process and a collaborative process that we're going to request the public's input and feedback to help us determine what that future system should look like. So we're in the process of developing some potential alternatives to put forward to the public, and also in the process of scheduling a series of open houses and office hours that the public can participate in. In fact, we've just put into our creative services team a request to design the posters that we will ultimately post out in the community to get the word out about these meetings. So that's very much in production right now. And we're looking at early to mid-September for the first suite of meetings and sort of mid to late October for the second suite of meetings, where we will present options to the public and you can give us your feedback. And this is going to be the opportunity to let us know what you think about the six and how it should come back and what that should look like. And we will discuss some various options of what that can look like, given the longer term constraints that we're facing and how we need to think about the system as a whole. So to sum up, for these next service changes in August, the 52 is going to cover a chunk of the former six. And then moving forward, you will have several opportunities to weigh in more specifically about the future system and whether or not the six comes back, what it looks like if it comes back, all those kinds of questions.
All right, thank you very much. Let's see if there's anything else that has to do with it. You've pretty much answered questions. Supervisor, do you have any more questions for our MTA guest?
Not about the six specifically, just, you know, what I wanted to tell this group that, you know, there is very strong desire among my colleagues to support the MTA into doing a full service restoration of the existing routes before we consider any changes. And so, you know, we're not all unanimous about that, but the majority of us are. And so, you know, it's tough because we're looking at, you know, deficits in the agency. It's a structural deficit. And at the same time, it's tough to ask the voters, you know, for more resources when the bus is not running. So it is both a political and a financial calculation. And I hear strong and clear from the neighbors in District 7 that we want a full service restoration. And, you know, in Sunset Heights, just like in Merced Extension Triangle and all over the district, folks are pushing to get to full service restoration as a pandemic recovery.
Great. So we have any other question? I think we've covered everything. I'm looking in the chat room to see if there are any more questions regarding MTA.
Okay, there's another question, Dennis. It's not Muni related, but it's still MTA about the traffic calming measures.
Right.
Do you want me to
go with that? I believe it would go to you as opposed to our... Why don't you go ahead and take that one?
Yeah, okay. So it says, are you aware of any traffic calming measures or speed enforcement on the 25-mile-an-hour zone on 7th Avenue between Lawton and Laguna Honda? There's a mid-block crosswalk and Muni stops there, and the speed limit is regularly exceeded by quite a bit. And yes, it's true. Like I have seen it. I ride my bike there, and it's sometimes people treat it like a freeway. And so I am not aware of any specific requests to the MTA, but now that you brought it up, I will put it on my list. We have some Vision Zero and traffic calming, but it's, farther up towards the park, or towards the Inner Sunset, towards Parnassus, not earlier where the bus stop is. We have a couple of participatory budgeting projects for that intersection of 7th and Lawton that are supposed to be rolled out in the next 24 months is what I had heard from the MTA last. The whole street, before that intersection, starting at, where Laguna Honda Hospital is and the Forest Hill Station, is often a one where people speed way, drive way too fast. But that intersection is on the high collision, network.
Great. Yes, I think there were questions about that, but you've covered that. There's another greater thing about MTA, but that would be for you, not for MTA. It's a question of how many MTA employees are there who do not work on Muni? Would you support revisions to the SFMTA budget to hire more drivers, maintenance, and reduce the well-paid desk jobs?
This is something that happened many years ago. It was led by Supervisor Peskin, but the Board of Supervisors doesn't have direct control over the MTA decisions in that way. It is the MTA Commission, which is a separate body. It's meant to do this, to keep them from having, political influence from us in that way. I actually don't know the breakdown in administrative staff to line staff. Maybe Mariana does.
I don't have those numbers ready in mind, but we do have a large part of our workforce is specifically what I understand by that question is people who operate or do maintenance or work on Muni in that regard. I would say that everyone who works at the SFMTA touches Muni in some capacity because it is the bread and butter of what we do. It is our transit service, and we are the transit agency. But a large portion of our workforce is composed of operators, inspectors, the folks who you would expect to see out in the field working with our vehicles, maintaining our vehicles, maintaining our yards. And then we have also a large number of staff who perform a number of other critical functions across the agency.
But it sounds, Mariana, perhaps, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it sounds from the question that it's perhaps people are concerned that it's too top heavy. So what perhaps we could do is find out the numbers of like administration versus service or direct service.
Sure.
And get back to folks with that. So the proper agency would be the MTA, board to go to with this concern. Mm-hmm.
And as far as executive staff and directors, that number certainly does not come close to the number of operations and maintenance Muni staff that we have. But we do have a need. I think the other thing the question is getting at is that we need more operators, and that is a reality before the pandemic. So we are working hard to try to fill those positions and then backfill any positions that due to retirements or whatever that we have lost. My understanding is we've not lost as many people as we were sort of projecting or expecting to, but we did kind of go into the pandemic at a little bit of a staff deficit. So we're working hard to staff up to the level that we need and needed prior of operators and maintenance and inspectors.
Another question here, Mariana, maybe you can answer. Does Can MTA add a duress switch for the drivers as they're harassed by riders who don't comply with the mask mandate?
That's a very interesting question, and thank you to whoever put that question out for caring about your operators. Yes, they face a lot of challenges. I would have to get back to you with what measures are in place for the driver. They are in constant communication with our transit management center. It's sort of our air traffic control, if you will. And they can request assistance and emergency help. As far as a duress switch, that would be interesting. But I think let me get back to you all with specifics on what that question is getting at, what kind of mechanisms the drivers have to request, assistance and emergency help. Because I do think that there are a number of mechanisms available to them.
Another one that I'm trying to visualize since I assume the 52 will turn left on Lawton and left on 9th and continue, which does not provide direct service to the 9th Avenue corridor retail, which will require having to walk two blocks to Lawton Street.
I could speak to that, Mariana. Hi, everyone. Steve Boland here from Muni Service Planning. That is not the routing. The routing will actually go all the way up to Judah and make a direct connection to both the end Judah as well as, the sort of core of the inner Sunset there.
Great. Thank you. Trying to find more MTA questions. We do have questions regarding Slow Street. Is that your part of MTA?
It is not, unfortunately.
We're probably happy to hear
that. You've got two transit people with you tonight.
Okay. Again, I'm searching the...
I saw that there was a question.
Because reading the questions, if it's okay, Dennis, I think there's a little bit of a confusion between the closure of Great Highway, which is completely closed to car traffic right now, and Slow Streets, which is not a closure to car traffic. It's just meant to slow traffic down. And so I think folks sometimes at the MTA perhaps has not done the communication with folks to separate that confusion, because I hear this from constituents all the time, folks saying, it's a slow street, so it's close to traffic, and it is not. It's just meant to slow traffic down. So in terms of the schools, the schools that are close to slow streets in the district, there's only, a couple. On the Sunnyside end, it's St. Finbar and Sunnyside. And then on the other side, it's Alice Fong Yu. The feedback that we have gotten from those schools has been positive, that they like having, traffic slowed. They're not permanent. They are only there during the emergency order. And any continuance of the program after that has to, again, go in front of the MTA board.
I don't see any more MTA questions. We can move on to some other subjects.
So there's questions about schools and the vaccine mandate. I think the issue is that it is not just the teachers union, but a lot of the municipal workers unions are still negotiating about whether their members are going to be required to, have a mask. A vaccine in order to keep working. And that has not been decided. To my understanding is the negotiations are still going on.
Um, I think there's a little confusion about when all the new route changes are going to take effect. Mariana or Steve, would you mind confirming the date for when those changes are taking effect?
Yeah. So there is a service change August 14th. That is in about 2 weeks, when we are going to bring back a number of bus routes, also the M Ocean View as rail. And we're going to extend the daytime service hours on a number of bus routes until midnight. All of that is available. All those details are available at SFMTA, and I can put this in the chat as well, sfmta.com/service changes. You'll find all of the details there of the changes that are going into effect. And I've seen a couple questions asking about the 52 and the 6 and when they're being restored. The 52 will be part of the change on August 14th. It will be brought back to its pre-pandemic route with an extension to cover a portion of the former 6 route. But right now we don't have a timetable for restoring the 6. As I mentioned earlier, maybe for some folks who weren't in the meeting at that point in time, we are initiating a public process to look at what our 2022 system of transit will look like. And that's an opportunity to weigh in on the future of the 6 pronouncements.
We've had a lot of questions to Sharp about the fact that the 52, even though it's going to restore some of the service that's missing, about polluting bus and noisy bus running the hills, that the 6 is normally non-polluting and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any electric options for that? Maybe a battery bus of some sort?
I can speak to that. We are actually doing a battery bus pilot right now, but we don't have any regular battery buses in operation in our fleet, as that's still a pretty new technology. I mean, I will say that our hybrid buses are a whole lot cleaner than both the diesel buses that we used to operate years ago, as well as most cars that are on the road today. They actually operate on a combination of biodiesel and electric. And therefore, I think they're, you know, on a per person basis in terms of who they're carrying, they're far less polluting than, you know, your average automobile. That said, you know, they're not as clean as our trolley buses. And I just refer back to, you know, what Mariana was just saying, which is that we are going to look at restoring the 6 as part of this upcoming process we have for looking at what our 2022 network will look like. There will be options to restore the 6 as it was before, some options for alternative ways of getting, you know, to destinations along the same corridor. And I would really just encourage everyone to participate in that process. I think it's going to be very important.
Thank you so much, Stephen and Mariana. You guys are doing incredible work. And, you know, the MTA has had a really heavy lift during this pandemic in every way. You know, as a city, we have been pretty steady in our making progress towards decarbonizing our activities. And so even if, you know, these are cleaner buses, it is going from electric to hybrid is a step backwards. And so I think that people, you know, don't like it, including me. And I get it. And we're doing, you know, the best that we can. But, you know, we got to keep making progress for our kids because we're going to be underwater, y'all.
Just a plug for our system. You know, we have the greenest transit fleet in the entire United States, bar none. Between our trolley bus network, which, you know, serves a large part of the city, as well as those, you know, biodiesel electric hybrid vehicles I talked about, there is no other transit system in the country that is operating a cleaner fleet than we are. We also, the best thing that you can do to combat climate change using transit is to get people to take trips on transit rather than using their cars. And that is something that historically we've been pretty successful at in San Francisco and, You know, I know there's a lot of debate around, you know, the network coming back to what it was before versus possible changes to it. But I think the bottom line is that, you know, we had 700,000 daily riders on Muni in a city of 850,000 people before this pandemic happened. And we're confident we can get back to there. And that is the way we really combat climate change.
I'm confident we can get back to that too.
I'd like to get back to some of the early questions that we got as people registered for the event. And it'll be for Supervisor Melgar. Will there be oversight for parklets, for example, evaluating those that have a lack of use?
Yes. I don't know about the phrasing of that question about what the ones that have a lack of use, because, you know, right now there is a window that the parklets have been given to where they pay no fee. And that is supposed to help businesses have a little more space, especially right now that folks are very nervous about eating indoors. However, it does cost money. So parklets that don't get lots of use, you know, will just not be there because no one is going to pay for it. Legislation that came out of the board was actually, you know, the work of multiple people and agencies, and I'm pretty proud of it. And I think that the most significant issue is that there are quality standards to the parklets. When the pandemic first hit, a lot of the businesses put out, you know, some of these structures that were not necessarily safe, and they went up really quickly without any standards. But the legislation does standardize the codes, the sizes, the access issues, the amount of space that needs to be in the sidewalk for, you know, people in wheelchairs who are mobility impaired, electrical, all of those things. And so I think it's a really, it's the first iteration, but I think that I'm proud of it. It's pretty good. We, like I said, were able to implement standards that weren't there before. In the parklets that are not getting a lot of use or that are not serving their purpose for those businesses, you know, they will just be taken down because no one's going to pay for them.
We have a couple questions regarding JFK Drive and when will that be open for traffic. I think some people just want to go there. It's also an accessibility issue for a lot of people that can't drive to the museum and the Academy of Sciences and the other attractions. There's been more attractions added in the east end of the park and less ways of getting there.
So both the JFK Drive and the Great Highway are actually under the Recreation and Parks Department jurisdiction, even though it is in collaboration with the MTA. But because it's under Recreation and Parks Department, whatever permanent changes are made beyond the emergency health order have to be done by a vote of the Board of Supervisors. And so what I understand is happening is that the MTA and the Recreation and Parks Department are conducting outreach right now to, you know, propose any permanent changes, which will go to the MTA board, the Recreation and Parks Commission, and then will come to the Board of Supervisors. But while there is an emergency health order on the books right now, it is our mayor who has the jurisdiction to make those changes.
Can you provide some data or information related to crime in our district?
Yeah. So as we all know, property crime has increased in our district, both residential and on the commercial corridors. I have to say that I have been very pleased at the response of our police department I am in very close contact with the Parkside, Terraval, and Ingleside police stations, and the captains have been creative and cooperative in the way that they have addressed hotspots, and also just, you know, been strategic on how to use their limited resources to support more officers on the street when needed, but also just using strategy to catch folks that, you know, are perpetrating some of these crimes. And so we, for example, we had a rash of window breaks on Ocean Avenue, and, you know, the Terraval police did a sting operation in the evening where they were able to figure out who it was that had been doing it and work with folks to make sure that it didn't happen again. And so far, you know, things have been quiet for about a month on Ocean Avenue because, you know, there was like really good intelligence that was sought after by the Terraval police officers. So, you know, the, we have had pretty good, coordination with SF Safe. And I know that folks, in this neighborhood have had a long history of working with that organization. I think that, you know, we are starting another round of participatory budgeting, coming in the fall. And so if you want to expand that partnership, you know, we would be very much open to doing that.
I have another question that sort of comes from a different angle about crime. It says, what will you do to fix the city budget that will reduce the police presence in our neighborhoods over time?
I'm not sure I understand the question, because the budget for this year, it doesn't do that. It's actually an expansion over the budget for last year.
Okay, let me answer the question. Can you explain the proposed fourplex zoning? How realistic is that on a 25 by 100 foot lot?
So there are actually three proposals right now for fourplex zoning from three different colleagues on the Board of Supervisors. So Supervisor Mandelman has introduced this fourplex legislation. I haven't actually seen it yet. It hasn't come out to committee. But also Supervisors Marr and Safai are putting forward their own versions of that. That has, both versions have an inclusionary requirement and, you know, some help for existing homeowners to capture that value. So I can't explain to you what it does yet, because it was just introduced. But, you know, I agree that there are challenges in small lots, and it is far from unanimous support on the board right now.
I think I have another question that sort of goes along with that. Is that if San Francisco doubles the density of population, how does it double the carrying capacity of the roads, sidewalks, and parks?
I'm not really sure how to answer that question.
I think that goes along with the
yeah. I mean, I think, of course, you know, if you're going to double population, you need to double infrastructure. I mean, that's an the obvious answer.
All right. Well, those are the questions I have from ahead of time. So I'm going back to the chat room, and you might be able to look at those. And can that see, Fred? Let's see, you talked about police patrols, MT employees.
Yeah, so there's a question about more police patrols. Like I said, you know, we have worked closely with the precincts in the district, and you know, have just had a great collaborative relationship. One of the things that happened in this budget that was new is that there the mayor unveiled this program called an ambassadors program, and that is civilian folks who are trained to be like eyes on the street, get to know merchants, get to know residents. Right now, that program has been deployed in high traffic areas, mostly in the downtown, Tenderloin, Chinatown. I am trying to get them to come out to our area. So Inner Sunset, West Portal, and Ocean Avenue, because we, you know, we need it. And I think it would be a really positive addition.
Yeah. Searching the chat room. Who is working on the impact of UCSF Parnassus campus build out and its impact on those of us that live in the immediate area?
Me. So the person in my on my staff who has been working on this is Jen Lowe, who staffs the land use and transportation committee. She is the chief of staff, and she, you may remember her, she was chief of staff to former President Norman Yee as well. We are, you know, working with the hospital folks. Right now, they are going through a design review phase for the hospital itself. If you are worried about those issues, I would say, you know, contact those folks and get all the community meetings around the design of the hospital are on their website. And they have been holding, Zoom meetings during the pandemic. But it's happening right now.
I may be running out of this question. There are several questions. We did a lot of things on slow streets, and when is Kirkham Street going to be reopened? I understand that the supervisor that handles the outer end of Kirkham is holding hearings about that. We're wondering about Kirkham from 19th Avenue up to 7th. And when that might be open, but I guess we're into the emergency area.
Yeah, we're still under the emergency order. I have heard lots of feedback from both folks who want it open and folks who want to keep it closed. And so if folks are really interested on the issue of the slow streets on Kirkham, we could certainly piggyback on Supervisor Marr's hearing. I actually hadn't heard that he was holding a hearing on that, but we could do a joint hearing and have folks come out and address it together.
Right. Well, I've got a lot of them in the early questions also. I'm seeing a few more of those pop up in the chat room. Yeah. Are there any other questions that people want to add to the chat room?
No, I've got one in there about the supervisors and the COO, Karen Chu, and her performance as the assessor.
I'm trying to find that.
Jack, would you like to repeat your question, please?
Sure. My question was placed there earlier on. And I know the supervisor doesn't have any individual authority, but I'm wondering, there's a fellow named Peter Fatu, who used to be the head of the Assessment Appeals Board. He knows the assessment process very well, and he knows the assessor, Carmen Chu, and he has all kinds of documentation showing that she reduces the assessments on her own house 4 times, and that when she was a supervisor, she got the assistance of Phil Ting, who was then the assessor, and he reduced her assessment on her own house as a favor to her. And there was never any documentation in the file that there should be showing why an assessment is reduced. And so he's dogged. He's got the instincts of a pit bull, and he goes to the city controller and gets no answer. They said, "We'll get back to you, maybe." And he went to the whistleblower, And he gets nothing but silence. He went to the Ethics Commission and got nothing but silence. So it has some of the appearance of being a really smelly silence campaign by city executives in regarding the behavior of Carmen Chu. And so the question is, what does one do if you're getting the silent treatment? Is there an appeal to the Board of Supervisors, or how is that to be handled? Maybe outside agencies should be brought in?
So, Mr. Barry, there is a process for these kinds of allegations. It is the Ethics Commission. The Ethics Commission has a hearing, they assess findings. As you know, they just assessed findings of the mayor yesterday. I don't know enough about this case to have an intelligent opinion. So I don't know where in the process it is. But I do know that as per the charter, the Ethics Commission has a responsibility to address the allegations and have a process and a hearing, have findings or the lack of findings in writing to the allegations. So if you would like, I would be happy to look into it and ask where it is in the process, but that is the proper process.
I can tell you that the Ethics Commission made a ruling that there's nothing there. And that's all. They gave them a one sentence reply saying, oh, there's nothing there, but they couldn't substantiate that. I'd like to get you and Peter Patu to talk directly, because he has page after page after page, and he knows the territory because he used to run the Assessment Appeals Board.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay. Thank you, Mr. Barry.
I've got a lot more questions here I want to get to.
Thanks.
Hold on, I just lost.
There's actually a question about the West Portal Theater. The question is, any new updates on the West Portal Theater? We've heard that your team has been working hard on that.
Yes, I have good news about the West Portal Theater. So they closed escrow 2 weeks ago. And it is the grandson of one of the original owners of the West Portal Theater, who was able to buy out all of his cousins. And they created a company named Empire LLC, and they intend to run it as a theater. That is good news. We hooked them up with the San Francisco Theater Foundation, which is a nonprofit that assists small neighborhood theaters to survive as theaters and not, do other things. And so they're working with them, and hopefully we can get them back online sooner rather than later. But that's really good news. They are very committed to that vision and understand that, he grew up going to the theater because it was his family's business. So I'm really pleased that it's somebody that we can work with who shares the vision of, preserving it as a theater. And you may or may not know that, that little cobbler shop on West Portal and also the back room for Mozzarella di Bufala are in the theater property. So they've also extended their lease so that, we don't have to worry about stabilizing those businesses too.
We have another question of how do we solve the big homeless problem in the city?
You got any easy questions for me?
You got about a minute or two there.
So, I'm all big homes.
the money that is going towards services to houseless individuals and families in this year's budget is unprecedented. I mean, part of that is because of Prop C. If you'll remember, we passed that, and there was a court challenge, and the court, said that it was okay for us to spend the money. So it is going mostly towards housing, as many folks believe that is what we need to do, is get people off the streets and into stable, supportive housing that, has the services that people need towards success, mental health, drug treatment, employment. And so, you know, it is something that we're currently in the process of expanding. But the other thing that has happened during the pandemic is that the state and federal government have also stepped in with a bunch of funding that has allowed us to acquire some of the smaller hotels that were in the periphery of the downtown area, you know, in the Tenderloin and in, even in other areas, like even in the Marina and in Chinatown, that we have bought for permanent supportive housing for formerly homeless individuals. And we've been able to get hundreds of units online like that and are in the process of acquiring a bunch more.
We have a question about the police. Is there any way you can see that the police patrols we used to have here driving around residential areas are restored? They were a great deterrent to car and home break-ins, as the folks thinking to commit the crimes never knew when a police car would drive by at night during the day. It was community policing in presence by car, in essence by car, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the goal. So this past year, you know, I have conversations with Chief Scott, who has been telling me that it's been tough to attract new recruits. And as folks have retired and left the force, we have not replaced them, you know, at the level that we need. And so I am glad that this year's budget provides the restoration of 120 positions in three police academies in the next 48 months, which is what, you know, will allow the police department to be able to resume patrols and the other things that, you know, have been missing because of the lack of staffing.
Do you have any updates on the ongoing development projects in Stonestown?
No, probably not more than what we have all seen. So they have, the last time I met with the Stonestown team, they were targeting the end of this calendar year to submit their plans to the planning department. And so far, I have heard nothing to the contrary. I think that is their timeline in terms of the designs and the unit mix. You know, I attended all of those community meetings, like some of you may have, but that's the latest that I have.
I just got an email question from someone, I guess. This is a Sharp member who's not that technical. She's, I have emailed your office a few times, left voicemails seeking a response to my question and for assistance. Many months later, and staff members return my call having no idea why I called. She was unapologetic for the long delay. It used to be a major problem with your office. How, if somebody really needs to get to you, what's the best way? Is it telephone or email?
It's both. You know, I will say that we got back to City Hall just last month. So in terms of, you know, the office systems, it has been challenging to get systems up and running, supervise interns. Usually it's the interns that, you know, go through the mail, both the snail mail and email. So it, you know, I think that, you know, being back in person has helped quite a bit. In terms of the supervision and the systems and, you know, but it, you know, I acknowledge it has been a challenge. I hope she got her question answered, and it sounds like she did finally talk to someone. And if, you know, but both, you know, email and phone work.
Yeah, I think there's somebody that is more technically challenged, but snail mail still works for someone like that?
It still works. Yeah, we still open snail mail.
Okay. Now, I'm looking. Somebody sent me, I can't find the question, but it was a question regarding our district attorney and his services.
So, you know, I don't supervise the district attorney. You know, luckily for me, that is the voters of San Francisco. And so I, all I can say is that like every other official in the city, I am doing my best to work with that office. It is an integral part of our criminal justice system. And I hope that we can get to a point where the office is responsive to both the, you know, public and also the police department, the courts, probation, you know, we cannot make progress on making things safer or any reform of the system if the system is not working cooperatively together. So that's all I am going to say on the matter.
I'm looking. I don't see any more. If anybody has any more questions, please put them in the chat room.
I have a quick question. Supervisor Melgar, could you please give us a quick update on where all the approved participatory budget proposals are right now and what the timeline would be for getting them implemented? Thanks.
So are you talking about participatory budget projects that have been approved in the past or the community grants that we just approved or future participatory budgeting
projects that were approved in the past?
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the staff person who handles that is Lila Carrillo, and she's on vacation this week. She does have a spreadsheet about every project and where it is. And I will ask her and she can send it to you. Because they're not all the same. You know, there are projects that were approved 4 years ago that haven't moved for, you know, or one reason or another, and projects that were done like right away. It just depends on what it is, you know. So, for example, you know, there is a little pedestrian bridge between District 7 and 11, the Havelock Bridge behind City College, that has not moved at all because part of the land is owned by Rec and Park. Part of it is Caltrans. Part of it is DPW. And all these interjurisdictional relationships have made really difficult to make progress on the project. But there are others, you know, that have moved very quickly. So we would be happy to give you, you know, all the information of where things are and, you know, how we are trying to push the projects through that haven't moved.
And I'm searching to see if there are any new questions. Your staff has given me all their contact info in the chat room, and I will forward that to the lady that sent the question to me. And if anybody else wants to take a look in the chat room, the contact info for supervisor staff is in the chat room right now for Jennifer Fiber and Megan Imperial. Nope, we have one more new question. Oh, it's a thank you from someone. Thank you for staff for joining us tonight. And I'd like to reiterate that. Do you have any closing comments?
No, it's, you know, a pleasure always coming and talking to you all. Feel free to reach out. Also sign up for our newsletter if you haven't already. We try to put in all of the things that are of interest to the neighborhood, you know, from what's happening, what's coming up, in ways to get involved. And if you have something that you want to send our way that you want us to include in the newsletter, please feel free to do that as well. So we will share it around to everyone else. Thank you all. Have a very lovely evening.
Thank you very much. Have a good time on vacation on the East Coast.
Okay, I will.
You're missing all of the 60 degree weather here.
It's really warm here. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right. Well, good night, everybody. Thank you so much for joining. If you have any follow-up questions, definitely feel free to either email it to us or email them directly to Supervisor Melgar.